this is part two of our discussion.
Yeah.
On birth control. And so, not sure if any of you guys were here last week, there's a handout up here, but we talked about kind of a little history, church history, history of the kind of medical developments. Talked through kind of that first couple pages. So we were in the middle of, we kind of point out that there was two main divisions, even though there's lots of smaller ones. But basically, among Christians currently, you could kind of generally divide them into kind of against contraception, that would say the Bible would be against any form of contraception or birth control. And then there's a second camp that would say, to varying degrees, in varying ways, there may be some times and places where we are not opposed to birth control or birth control methods. And so we started to look at scriptural reasoning. We started with the argument of those against contraception. And I think we had just made it through kind of page four here. We looked at natural law, meaning that some people would argue that, you know, the design of the sexual organs are specifically designed for the purpose of procreation. And so this logic would say, you know, when you limit the function, you're kind of taking away from the purpose for which God created sex. And we looked at the Genesis passage about God's command to be fruitful and multiply. And then we also talked about an incident in Genesis with Judah's son, Ur. Was evil, he died, and he said to his other son, to go into your brother's wife, perform your duty as brother-in-law, raise up offspring. Onan knew that the offspring would not be his, so he went into his brother's wife. He wasted his seed on the ground in order to not give offspring to his brother. And so this is a passage we talked about. It's the conclusion, but what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord. He took his life also. So that was also a passage that sometimes is used to say, because of what he did there, that was a form of preventing birth, preventing conception, and the Lord was viewing it as displeasing, so it's often used to kind of argue against birth control. That's kind of our review. So, where we're at now is, I think, top of page five. Some of these translations are more, the vocabulary may be different in your Bible. So, Deuteronomy 23:1, the version in the handout says, "No one who is emasculated or has his male organ cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord." So there's this description. And so it's describing men who, I think in one version, it's a little bit more graphic. The anatomy that's crushed or cut off. And so, what relevance would you think somebody might interpret this as being relative to methods of birth control? So, if we go back to the methods, there was kind of a few different categories. Do you see anything there that might relate to this particular one? Back on that first couple pages. Give you a hint. In section A, birth control methods which do not cause abortion. Make a connection here.
Surgical sterilization.
Yeah. Surgical sterilization. So we know that, like, when we used surgical sterilization, we're permanently altering the physical makeup of either the male or the female body, the reproductive system. And so some would say that this passage, this verse in Deuteronomy, would be prohibitive, saying that it is, God would not approve of doing such a thing. See the kind of connection there? So that's kind of two main arguments. There's natural law. There's the following scriptures that we kind of just looked at. This is one that's kind of interesting, is this concern that the link between birth control and promiscuity. Okay, so that's a common connection that's made. So definitely, the creation of, for example, the birth control pill was something that allowed people to be more free in separating the act of sex and the procreation. So what would be a good reason to say we should discourage birth control based on that?
I mean, it separates procreation from sex, kind of.
Yeah. And so, like, in this mindset, what is the purpose of people, what does it allow that it wouldn't allow if we didn't have or didn't use birth control?
Definitely promiscuity and adultery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of the line of thinking, is that if one of the good things, they view linking the potential for birth as a good thing, and that people, it would discourage them from promiscuity or from adultery if they think that there's a potential. Morning, cold?
Yep.
Welcome into the warmth.
We'll welcome you in.
We're talking about birth control, so I know you'll have lots of comments, right? I think we're around page 5. So there's that argument that, you know, when you allow for birth control, then it can be used by people to allow for a more promiscuous lifestyle. And then a fourth thing is some methods of birth control have a variety of things that could possibly be health concerns. So some of them listed here, this is something, again, when I was preparing, hadn't done a lot of research beforehand, just Carissa, we had talked a lot in our marriage and parenting and our raising of kids and when we were having kids about which methods, and so I kind of learned from her and through her and her talks with her doctor and then also here at the church. But it says, for example, IUDs can facilitate pelvic infections and occasionally perforate the uterus. They can be associated or are also associated with ectopic pregnancies and spontaneous abortions. So there's some potential side effects. When I was reading this, it may remind me of the medical commercials, right? Now you take this pill, and then the rest of the commercial is the potential side effects. Birth control pills can cause such problems as breakthrough bleeding, nausea, breast tenderness, and weight gain. They can also cause more serious problems such as blood clots and where it increases as you get older, over 35. So, and that even though these risks are kind of generally low, you know, some people view them as an adverse side effect that's not necessary. Okay. It's also argued that the increase of the birth control devices could be tied to the rise of venereal disease. So, and this has been basically kind of arguments that have been unchanged for probably the last 20 years in that sense. So there may have been developments in different side effects or fewer side effects. So, health concerns, right? That's kind of a fourth reason why. I guess before we go on, I think, what do you think are the most valid out of the reasoning and what we've looked at? You've got natural law, you've got some of the scripture arguments we've looked at, the idea of the promiscuity, the health concerns. What do you think are good reasons or things that are, you know, kind of valid objections to why a person shouldn't use birth control?
Who's objecting?
Who's objecting to the use?
Yeah, who's objecting to the birth control?
Well, it kind of depends on
I'm just asking, who is objecting? Objecting of the birth control.
Okay, so there, what we talked about, kind of the first, is that, like, traditionally, there were times even back when Paul was writing Corinthians that there was a view that set, like we were more spiritual, that Christians were spiritual and that everything fleshly was evil. And so there was even a passage of Corinthians where Paul's talking about people are saying it's better not to get married, or if you're married, not to have sex at all. Because they had this view that sex was evil, it was bad. And so he developed the theology that sex was good. We had the kind of a lesson about that as to why it was good, what it's created for. But there are Christians who would say, for these very reasons, that the purpose of sex, looking at the creation mandate, was to be fruitful and multiply. And so when you limit, when you use birth control, you could be limiting God's ability to, or his desire to, bless through children. There are some who would say, kind of the scriptural argument about when you do like a surgical procedure, it's kind of that principle from the Old Testament, that you're mutilating the reproductive organs. There's some that would say you're increasing, changing the meaning of sex to something that's not, that God intends for it to be always linked to the potential for procreation. So there's these arguments we're trying to know, are they valid? And different churches hold different arguments. You know, the Catholic Church is extremely...
That's what I'm, kind of the point I'm getting to. Is there's objections from, there's so many different sects of this mindset and the social norm of the secular world, the non-church world. You know, the church, period, should be aware of the fact that any sex outside of marriage is adultery. So is there any reason, I mean, as long as you're not, you know, avoiding abortifacients, which is something that would cause, birth control that causes, you know, if you don't have as many kids as you can, really.
Yeah, and we kind of talked about there's
because that's just, I don't know how sex parts of the church can get this so wrong and when it's not that difficult.
Right. So we talked about, right, you've got at one end of the extreme, there's a belief that you can kill a child at any time, 9 months, 1 month, whatever.
Even in the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Among people who would claim
I know
to be
for
Christians.
A fact the Methodist Church promoted abortion at one time. They kind of backed away from it.
Yeah, and there's lots of, like you said, there's lots of ways people will give explanations, right, as to what they support, why they support it, when they support it. And that's kind of what our goal is, to try to figure out scripturally, right, what in here, right? So we talked through, you know, I think, you know, in here we've got, okay, you've got sex when you're married, right? If you're married, then you can have sex. But there were times when even the church or the Catholic Church or other churches would say only sex that might potentially result in a pregnancy. So if the wife's menopausal or if there's some sort of sterility, right, that no, it's not. So there's kind of just degrees at which, you know, then you've got level where you'd say, you know, so long as you don't do anything to actively prevent conception, then you're free to have sex, even if you, it's not likely that you'll produce a child, right? And so you kind of keep going through there. And like kind of in the middle here, you have the different methods. Right? Methods of birth control or contraception. Right? And some of those methods are, right, abortive in the sense that they can, a fertilized egg can be caused to not implant or be terminated. And so that's where we had a little bit of a discussion. Good morning. We had a little bit of discussion about, you know, what do we know and, you know, what do we not know about how certain methods work. We kind of divided it up into, that's like those first few methods. We had A, right, all 1 through 7 there. They do not cause abortion in the sense that they're purely physical and that they restrict the ability of the sperm and the egg to ever possibly meet, in a sense. Okay? And if they fail, then it doesn't result in an abortion, it results in a conception, or it could. And then you have B, that we know that they can cause abortion, all the those four methods. And then we talked a little bit about, I think there was a section C, where we said that amongst believing pro-life Christian doctors and pediatricians, gynecologists, looking for that page, they are in the place where they don't, what's that page? What page is that on? You guys know what I'm talking about? Okay, top of page 3, where they're in the place where there's a split on whether there's a potential that they could cause an abortion. Okay, there's a good section that believes that there is a potential or a pause or a cause to, because of, for example, in that second sentence, it prevents ovulation, thickens the mucus lining so as to prevent fertilization. So those are not abortive because they prevent fertilization. And 3, they make the uterus unsuitable for implantation, at least in theory. So what they're saying is they don't 100% know what's going on here and how they work. And so it's potentially, there's a possibility. There's many pro-life doctors that would say they don't believe they can cause an abortion, but there are those who say that although they don't know they can, there's enough of a risk or a potential that they think that they might. And so we talked about that is something where, you know, if you are not very sure, very confident that it's not going to cause an abortion, then your conscience and your spouse's conscience would prohibit you from using that. But we weren't quite at the place where we could say definitively that we know for certain that no one should use this, because there are some Christian believing medical professionals who believe no, these can't cause abortions. So it's kind of an uncertainty and a measure of how much of that doubt, how much of that. And there's a couple of position papers I would say if you're interested in more, like if you go, I think it's American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. There's a couple that explain kind of the details of those two ideas. So I guess we'll start looking at some kind of responses to some of the objections that we brought up. I'm getting lost because when I printed my paper, they flipped this way instead of like this. So I have to like, okay, now turn it like this way.
Bottom of five.
Okay. All right, so we'll kind of look at each of the ideas that would be in favor of the no contraception of any kind, and look at, is that scriptural? And if not, in what way would it not be? And just have some discussion. So one idea is that when we look at natural law, in the sense of what's the natural way that the world works and functions, biology of people, the biology of the way we're created, it has a few limitations, especially with the curse involved. The one example might be Genesis 3:16. So one of you guys want to read Genesis 3:16?
To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you will bring forth children, yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you.
Yeah. So it's natural that in childbirth, what's going to happen?
Pain.
Yeah. And so one might ask, well, so should we, you know, there's a debate there, right? Should we just have natural childbirth, or can we use things like pain medication, epidurals, those type of things? And that would be one question. We're going to read Genesis 1:28 again. Good morning.
Multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth.
Yeah, so we talked about that's command to be fruitful and multiply, and then the following three additional, to fill the earth, to subdue it, to rule over it. So part of subduing the earth, right, is this idea of bringing everything, the physical world, under the control. And so when it comes to medical technology, right, things that can be brought under control to counteract the effects of sin and the curse. That's kind of one thing where we think about, well, there may be a potential to not always just do what is natural physically to interact or to bring the physical world under our control or bring it under subduing in a sense. Oh, Super Bowl's today. Okay. And then let's look at some of the biblical arguments. So things where we go back to some of these scriptures that we read before again, revisit them. So in the Genesis passage, I guess we've read that a couple times. If we look at this passage and decide what's the purpose for sex, what would we conclude?
Procreation.
Yeah, it's for procreation, right? And so a follow-up question might be, you know, is the command given to every individual human being? What do you think?
I'm sitting over here saying most of
them. Yeah.
I hope not. Yeah. Can you think of any exceptions?
I mean, if they're naturally unable.
Okay.
Those who marry later in life.
Okay.
Singles.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? What about healthy people who are able to produce children, are they commanded to be fruitful and multiply?
If they're married.
Okay.
That'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
But if they're not.
Yeah.
That would definitely be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's an idea that it's possible that you can have a healthy man or woman who chooses not to be married. I can think of one obvious example in scripture that you know, Jesus didn't marry. Contrary to I don't know, I can't remember the books that were written about kind of heretical books. Paul, right, talks about in 1 Corinthians, he talks about how not everyone has the same gift, but you know, he's chosen not to marry. So I think the purpose of bringing that up is it doesn't address necessarily whether or not birth control is allowable within marriage. Okay, what it does point out is that scripturally the creation mandate to be fruitful and multiply is a general command that God wants human to fill the earth and bring it under his control. But how that happens and how that's carried out varies from individual person to individual person. Not every person will bear children. Not every person will marry. We see that scripturally through examples and through people that did not marry, did not bear children. So whether or not it affects those who are married, we'll have to look at that. But the command to bear fruit, it's not a sin to live your life and not produce children. Any thoughts or comments on that idea?
What about with a healthy married couple who, instead of having their own children, chooses to adopt? Is that still fulfilling the be fruitful and multiply? Adopt or foster?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the healthy married couple, right? What do they do? And what do you think? Any thoughts? This is the Bible, like in Bible study, always, our joke is that when you ask a question, well, what do you think? That's the first.
Yeah.
You got any thoughts? I mean, what do you think? Or what do you guys think of the class?
I think adoption is biblical. It's something that would, you know, further the kingdom by bringing those children into your home. So.
And are you're bringing out like the possibility that they intentionally, they could have their own biological children, but they choose not to, and instead adopt.
Yeah.
thoughts? So, yeah, the role and the purpose of the marriage, the role of a family, and the role of parents, right? They're all kind of connected, and it gets at each one. And so I think in your question, we do see that they have a desire to raise up and parent godly offspring. And the question is whether or not, you know, God would desire that they be open to having biological children as well, right? So I think... let's keep going with the scriptural review of like the purpose of sex and marriage. So Genesis 2:18 through 25. The Lord God said, "It's not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him." Okay, so what's kind of the gist of what's a purpose for the what's God seeing as the problem here? What's he addressing?
Loneliness, desire for helpmate.
Yeah. And so, in this case, it's not, he's not talking about necessarily children, but the companionship and the oneness, the one that sense that you get from the marriage relationship. And then let's go back to Genesis passage that we looked at. So we read that earlier. Jack, you want to read that again for us, Genesis 3, 38?
Now Judah took a wife for her, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But her, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord took his life. Then Judah said to Onan, "Go into your brother's wife and perform your duty as your brother-in-law to her, and raise up offspring for your brother." Onan knew that the offspring would not be his, so when he went into his brother's wife, he wasted his seed on the ground in order not to give offspring to his brother. But what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord, so he took his life also.
Yeah. Okay, so in the passage, right, what's the duty that he's supposed to, what's the goal?
Offspring. Get her pregnant.
Yeah, get her pregnant so that she can have offspring, right? And this is in Genesis a long time before the full kind of description in the Levitical law about the Levirate purpose, whereas if you have all the tribes pass down their lands, and if a man married and died before he had a son to pass the property and the line onto, the brother was to conceive a child with his wife, and that child would continue on his line. And that was kind of spelled out more in Leviticus. So evidently this is something that had been practiced even long before that. So this is back in Genesis 4. So the duty here is to... what's he say? Raise up offspring for your brother, right? And so why do you think he did what he did? What do you think was his motivation?
Money.
Yeah, you think? Talked about could be, right? Because if there's nobody to pass it on to, then...
Well, yeah, how would that work out if she did, if his brother didn't have any offspring?
Well, we know later on.
Passed on to him.
Well, later on, we know that the way it would work is that the firstborn would receive double the inheritance of all the others.
Right.
And I don't know. We don't really know if this, how much of that was a tradition, and rather it was practiced the same way. But in later on in the Levitical law, that Ur was firstborn, he'd get a double portion. So it could be that he would receive the double portion,
right,
in place of his older brother. So
or less to share.
Or what?
Or less for his offspring.
Yeah,
less
to share. He'd get their offspring.
Could be.
Bite out of it.
Yeah, could
he be. Had to share it with offspring.
And, you know, he didn't, you know, I don't know.
And I never did say that he had a wife either.
Let's see. Yeah, I haven't. Let's see. I don't.
I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah.
He might have wife too. So who knows?
I would assume he did, but I haven't. He had his own wife and kids. So, any reason why it might be dubious to claim that it forbids birth control here? Why would you maybe say it doesn't? What is it saying to us, or why would we want to be careful here?
Well, it's talking about a specific instance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as broad as forbidding it.
Mm-hmm.
This was God's law then.
So this
because
was in Genesis.
He was killing these guys off, so.
Yeah, so it was in Genesis, and we see that the Lord is directly interacting
with
them.
This is law, so then it would be a duty from God.
In terms of when it says perform the duty of.
Right.
Okay.
Then Onan went on his own and didn't do his duty,
mm-hmm.
and that cost him.
Yeah, and we talked about how when it says, but what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord. I mean, the thing that comes right before it when it says what he did was the description. He knew the offspring would not be his. He did go into his brother's wife, but wasted his seed on the ground in order not to give the offspring. So there's several kind of elements of what he did that together make what he did evil. And so one thing might be to focus on one of those things and exclude the other three in terms of that maybe a bit not the complete picture to say that it's just the fact that he wasted his seed on the ground, that's the one thing that is displeasing, not the fact that he knew the offspring would not be his or that he did it in order not to give offspring
to his
brother.
Well, his motivation was his heart was not in the right place. That would be the narrative of this.
Well, and
is
just the idea
about himself.
Yeah, just the idea of selfishness.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do what I want and not do
anything. Mm-hmm. And to kind of rob the... does it ever give Tamar, right? To kind of rob her of an inheritance, rob her of someone to carry on the line. Okay. Comments, thoughts here?
My thought would be to completely prohibit birth control. I mean, he's obviously he's withholding offspring altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always what birth control does, it's just maybe for a time,
mm-hmm.
right? So if a married couple procreates, but practices
mm-hmm.
birth control in between or something.
Yeah, one thing about the verb here is that it carries the idea of whenever he went in. It wasn't like he went one time and this happened. It's that he would do this repeatedly, and every time he would avoid so that there would never be any offspring. That's true. Other thoughts? Okay, for all the fellows, let's clear this up. No one who is emasculated or has his male organ cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord. Does it necessarily forbid sterilization? Let's go to that passage, Deuteronomy 23. Let's see the context there. Now the ESV is a little bit more graphic. I'll go ahead and read some of these verses, starting in Deuteronomy 23. I'll probably read just 1 through 6. No one whose testicles are crushed or whose male organ is cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord. No one born of a forbidden union may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of his descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord. No Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of them may enter the assembly of the Lord forever. because they did not meet you with bread and water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor from Pethor of Mesopotamia to curse you. But the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam. Instead, the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loved you. You shall not seek their peace or their prosperity all your days forever. So, what's kind of the theme of that passage, right? There's some who will not enter the assembly of the Lord. Which, who or why?
Well, in the first verse, it's because of willful, like, choosing to mutilate themselves.
Mm-hmm. And kind of, does the rest of the passage maybe give us some insight that men were often called eunuchs, this willful mutilation, couldn't get that word out, was generally performed, was associated with this idolatrous practices done by the pagan societies and cultures and surrounding. So if you notice the verses following, they're talking about the forbidden union between and the Ammonites, the Moabites, and this idea that Israel and the assembly of the Lord should not be including of these pagan surrounding nations and their practices. That's kind of the... There's not really a mention of because it prevented appropriation.
It's more to, like what the note says, more to be eunuchs to serve in great houses or something as opposed to actually.
Yeah. And then I want to bring up, let's see, I think we have time, a couple of other passages that just talk about just sex in general. So I didn't include Song of Songs or Song of Solomon, but basically the whole book that focuses on the intimacy and the physical intimacy really doesn't make any reference to procreation or childbirth. It's generally about the relationship between the husband and wife, the union, the companionship, and even the pleasure. So Proverbs 5:15-19, drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be yours alone, and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. And so, right, what is it saying here that would push against that sex can only be for procreation? What's kind of a purpose here?
Pleasure.
Yeah,
pleasure,
that's pretty obvious there. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, of pleasure, let your fountain be blessed, so we see a blessing. Rejoicing, right? There's a satisfying, exhilarating. So those are kind of the words that we see being used there. And then one more that deals with kind of the passage in 1 Corinthians 7, looking at the purpose of sex within marriage. So, somebody want to read that, verses 2 through 5 from 1 Corinthians 7.
But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another except for agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control.
Okay. So a lot of kind of context there. He's giving specific instructions here. And this is a prescriptive passage, where many of the other passages we've read have been descriptive, meaning Remember when we read the Old Testament, oftentimes we read a description of something that happened, and what we're to take from that requires some interpretation, whereas when we read a prescriptive passage, it's much more clear. These are specific commands. You are to do these things. So there's kind of additional weight to a prescriptive passage, oftentimes over a descriptive. So what's the purpose, right? Why are they to come together, husband and wife? Or to stop depriving one another. What's the purpose?
Remove temptation from doing something extramarital.
And that, you see that in which part of the passage?
The last part, so that saying will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control.
Mm-hmm. So, again, it's not really speaking to birth. It's not really speaking to procreation. He doesn't necessarily say, in this passage, he's not saying you need to stop depriving one another so that you can come together and procreate and bear children. Right? His point here is that there's some other purpose which you're created for that, and you're designed in that sense that if you're married and you deprive one another, right, you're creating this temptation. You're creating an opportunity to be tempted. And so this avoidance of temptation, he kind of explains that even more as he talks about whether or not a person can remain single, whether they become married. Let's go ahead and read. I think there's another helpful part of that. Go to 1 Corinthians 7, where he also talks about I guess we can save that for another time. But 32 through 35 just talks again about kind of that idea that we said before, that I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. Unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord and how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married woman is anxious about the worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. So he's bringing up, right, he's saying that, you know, when you're married, this is what it's like. You necessarily have to attend to the needs of your spouse, and it divides away from your attention to the Lord. So he's pointing out there's strength in both, right? A person who's single and unmarried can be wholly devoted in their service and not concerned about the needs of their spouse. A person who's married is attending to. And so he's not diminishing the role of marriage here, but he's saying that just it's just the nature of the relationship. And so there's a difference between them. Both are pleasing. He says later on, so then he who marries is betrothed as well. He who refrains from marriage will do even better. So they're both doing well. They're both serving. Both are acceptable. What about that? Thoughts about 1 Corinthians, that 7, 2 through 5? Any comments here? Does that support? Does it push against the idea of the use of birth control? Do you think it really says anything about birth control?
I don't think it necessarily says anything for or against birth control.
Mm-hmm.
It was about maintaining the relationship, keeping it strong, mm-hmm. keeping that physical,
mm-hmm.
the physical thing going in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, in the context of when this was written, I don't know how much birth control it had, other than going to the dirt with it,
Yeah.
an owning thing.
Right.
But, children are going to be a result of that.
Mm-hmm. And,
so it would be almost a command then. Or would be?
What would be?
That the physical relationship take place inside of a marriage.
Yeah, I would say it is. Yeah. You know, from this passage, I would say it is a command that if you are married, that you should not deprive one another.
Right.
He says that very explicitly. Just a side note, wouldn't be something you would want to quote to your spouse saying, hey, says that your body is mine. You know, it might not be the best way to go about it. But
the best time to bring that subject up is before they get married.
Yeah.
You tell your daughters
mm-hmm.
that if there's ever a chance you think
and your sons,
you're not wanting to do
right.
this, don't get married.
yeah.
Because it's a command to do it.
Yeah.
So that'd be a good time to bring that subject up.
Yeah, and notice that, you know, it addresses each one. He says the wife does not have authority over her own body, saying that he's addressing her, saying this is something that you need to accept. And then he addresses the husband. Husband, you don't have authority over your own body. You each kind of belong to another. And instead of saying, husband, you can take your wife whenever you want. Wife, you can take your husband whenever you want. It's more addressing to the individual, saying you're responsible for this. Okay, so just some other kind of just thought questions, I guess, related to Dave's example was if it's shown that automobiles are often associated with bank robberies, should we come to the conclusion that automobiles are wrong? Why or why not? So I think he's alluding to the argument before that there's an association between the use of birth control and promiscuity. So does that necessarily link one to be prohibited? And then what do you guys think about this? I did a lot of thinking about this verse. 1 Timothy 5:8, somebody want to read that? It's kind of on page 9.
But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever.
So how might someone say this passage kind of persuades me that I might or should use or that we should use birth control? What do you think?
Some people have the ability to have like 20 kids. I mean, some couples are just more prone to having kids than
yeah.
others.
Yeah, and so for them, if you're, you know, making enough to, I mean, can you provide for 20 kids, right? And it's different in a sense today where I guess we've read about so many people 100 years ago that the wife had 15 kids but only 5 made it to adulthood because so many of them would die, you know, from disease and sickness at a young age. But now, oftentimes, if you have 15, all 15 can and probably will live. So it could be that a couple may choose to limit the number of children if they're apt. They, you know, have 3, 4, 5, and that this seems to happen right away, and it becomes increasingly difficult to provide for them. Okay, and I think there's kind of a, it would be difficult to define what you mean by, provide for, I guess.
15 smartphones?
Right. You don't want to go this extreme.
Let that go.
I don't think it just means provide financially, but providing the discipleship that's mm-hmm. required of Christian parents.
Mm-hmm. Food and shelter and
mm-hmm.
the teaching of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the evangelism that goes on in a
yeah.
family,
yeah.
a large family like
right.
that. I've actually seen this in action.
Yeah.
Works well.
So there are many that have large families and that find a way to provide regardless of their means. But I think that, you know, that is a command that we are to provide for them. So whether or not that would potentially allow for either the number or the timing, whether it be, we talk about how there's the issue of wisdom in terms of, you know, a believer, two believers can marry, you know, they're not prohibited, but is it maybe wise to wait until you have a job and finish school or different circumstances are in place and then decide to be married? Is there possibility to do kind of a similar thing? Well, let's see. Oh, we didn't get to. We'll go one more week, I think. We didn't get to the last question. So, we'll stop there for today. Maybe one more week next week.